Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report. That was great. That was like a really, really a terrifying beast beginning to do maybe some jazz sounds with their mouth.
It was witch scatting.
Witch scatting is one of my favorite forms of music that maybe exists, probably exists. I don't know. I'll search Spotify or Shazam. I'll Shazam just the earth for witch scatting. Yeah. Anyway, we are happy to be here. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and the person who's doing the witch scatting is Ken Knapsack. We love talking about the Clone Wars. We are discussing every episode or arc. If the story continues over many episodes, we are getting toward the very end of season four. We are here today to talk about the tragedy of the Night Sisters, but really mostly the tragedy of Asajj, the hope of Asajj. I should have thought more about this title, Ken. The episodes in this arc are season 4, episode 19, Massacre, written by Katie Lucas and directed by Stuart Lee. Season 4, episode 20, Bounty, written by Katie Lucas and directed by Kyle Dunleavy. Before we even get into the summary, let's just do some work right here on the air. What do you think the title of this arc should be?
This should be the Rise, Fall, and Redemption of Ventress? It's not quite full redemption.
Maybe the Fall and Rise. I think you're onto something because it really does end on a hopeful note.
Yeah, it does. I love the note. Yeah. Yeah, maybe that. The fall and rise of Asajj Ventress. Can't even say the name. Yes, Ventress.
Ventress, perfect. Ventress. Well, I'll give you a break from talking because I'm going to dive into the summary of this two-episode arc. Here we go. Fractured Identity. After the betrayal of both Dooku and her own Dathomirian assassin, Savage Opress, the former separatist Asajj Ventress returns home to Dathomir. The leader of the Night Sisters, Mother Talzin, welcomes her back with open arms, assuring Asajj that her true destiny is ahead of her. The Night Sisters hold a magic rebirth in a spooky pond for Asajj, then celebrate with a feast. But the joy is short-lived as Count Dooku has decided now is the time to get revenge on the Night Sisters for attempting to kill him. The Sith Lord sends droid leader General Grievous to Dathomir. Asajj is racked with guilt that her past has come to destroy her future. But she fights on, leading the Night Sisters against the droid legions. Mother Talzin retreats to a hidden cave where she asks the Night Sister elder, Old Daka, to perform a chant. The spell causes dead, mummified Night Sisters to emerge from cocoon-like burial pods hanging from trees. Asajj faces Grievous and almost defeats him, but the cowardly general commands his droids to fire on Asajj. She is wounded and retreats into the forest. Talzin then uses a lock of Dooku's hair and a small effigy to cause the Count great pain and perhaps even death. But on Dooku's command, Grievous follows a trail of green magic to the hidden cave, kills Old Daka, stops the army of the undead, and slaughters the entire Night Sister clan. Mother Talzin escapes in green spirit form and encourages Asajj to flee as well. Asajj heads to the Outer Rim to drink her problems away at Chalmun's Cantina and falls in with a gang of bounty hunters led by young Boba Fett. In search of money and purpose, Asajj joins his mission. Boba Fett, Asajj, Bosk, Lats Razi, Highslinger, and a young, sprightly Dengar head to the world of Quarzite, where they are given the task to guard a mysterious box for marauders on an underground subtram. The tram is then attacked by cage warriors riding Millidons. One by one, the bounty hunters are thrown from the tram until only Asajj and Boba Fett are left standing. They unlock the box and discover the secret cargo is a young woman named Pluma. Boba is bested by the leader of the cage warriors, Pluma's brother, Krizmo. But Asajj subdues Krizmo with multiple gut punches and a force choke. Pluma then shames Asajj, saying she's only turning her over because Asajj does not understand what it's like to be ripped from your home. Asajj, of course, understands is that is exactly what happened to her. Boba insists they complete the mission, and Asajj insists the Force choke the air out of the young bounty hunter. So the tram arrives at its destination, where Asajj discovers the Belugan leader, Awada Blank, has kidnapped Pluma to be his bride. Asajj collects her payment, and Oda Blank discovers she's actually delivered Boba Fett in a box. Asajj has freed Pluma and Krizmo, taking credits from them as well. She returns to the surface and gives the other hunters their cut, even leaving money for Boba. The bounty hunters suggest she stay with them, but Ventress says no. She has found her own path and her own future for now. So there you go. Two episodes with a lot of action. Ken, what is your overall reaction to this arc?
First of all, applaud that summary because there's these two episodes go everywhere. There's right? Only like two or three locations, but it goes everywhere. And an all-star of roster of characters. I love that summary and love these episodes. Really enjoy these episodes. The bounty episode in particular is this great sci-fi thrill ride along with the deep themes and all the stuff going on. And Corsite might actually be like a Denis Villeneuve Star Wars. maybe he'll finally love Star Wars if he watches this episode. It just that really pulled me in more than it did in the past.
Yeah. So did you like these episodes in the past? Do they linger in your imagination?
I really liked him. The problem was I think I thought they were in the earlier arc, the big Talzin and Ventress arc with Katie Lucas writing it early on.
The creation of Savage and the betrayal of Dooku and all that.
Correct. Yeah, I thought this was just the next episode. Clearly not. Clearly its own thing. And it works even better as its own thing for us to check in with Ventress and kind of push her on down the line in terms of storytelling and a wide open future. Really effective. So I've always liked them, and now I really love them because I have a better sense of where they are in the story.
Yeah, that helps a lot, right? Yeah, as I've been saying, as we go through season four, I was speed watching these episodes to get to the return of Maul. These episodes kept feeling like, I bet Maul's going to pop up. And then, no, he still wasn't back. We'll get to that when we discuss the final two episodes of season four. But I also remember being emotionally gut punched by these episodes. Like, I was on the side of the Night Sisters. I think that it just the way that it's presented, that they actually do have a community. They're not really trying to mess with anybody, and it's everybody else who's causing them problems.
Right.
And the way that episode is structured, I remember thinking, like, yeah, you got a bunch of droids and hubris, but these ladies are creative and have magic, and you're done for. Group, like, oh no, just being shocked that they actually get totally wiped out, and then. Hey, great. More with Boba Fett. He's getting closer to, you know, being the bounty hunter that we know. Is that Dengar? More boss content. Is that Chalmers Cantina?
Yeah.
I was intrigued by all of it, but just sort of distracted by how much it was, right?
Yeah. No, especially I was laughing at that, you know, they go to Chalmers and it's like that was back then was almost like a crazy novelty, right? Like just like, well, they went there. Now it happens a lot. I don't mean that in a negative way. From Mando into other episodes. I love it. I love seeing Chalmers. It's fun, but I totally forgot that. Yeah. That she slides in there.
Yeah. Yeah. How many people do you need for a softball team?
You need nine on the field, maybe a couple bench players. We're almost there.
Okay. I'm thinking if we could make a softball team out of Chalmers Cantina bartenders yet. And
you're getting there.
We're getting close. We're getting close. I think Wu-Hair would probably be on the bench. Yeah. Sorry, Wu-Hair. Yeah. It's just your surly attitude. Yes. Anyway, watching these two episodes together in the flow, I really love them. I think I always liked Asajj, but I'm so much more attached to her. And attached to this arc of her being lost in without purpose and identity and trying to find herself and, you know, knowing where the story goes and other storytelling makes this arc even more powerful. But then it's kind of fascinating in that we'll get into the details, of course, but from Asajj's perspective, this is one story with two parts about her kind of trying to find herself. But in terms of the actual content and the style, in some ways they could not be more different, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked about this a lot. Of one of the things I really like about Clone Wars is it really seemed like any restraints were pulled back and Lucas and Filoni and everybody else involved were like, Star Wars is about dipping into other genres to make this unique thing that is Star Wars. And that the fact that the first one is just no holds barred, witch folk horror,
yeah,
right, with hidden caves, undead mummified zombie night sisters, cursed wax idol of Count Dooku, boils, everything, everything you could want. It's just so all in horror. And then it's definitely through the science fiction, space fantasy lens of Star Wars. But that second one is such a Western, right? Of the new person wanders into town and goes to the dusty cantina and ends up involved in a train heist with gunslingers having to make a moral choice in this frontier world. Like the whole second episode has this very Western vibe to me.
Yeah, to the point where I think the Mandalorian should credit like this episode for just being that kind of you know, gunslinger goes off and finds a mission vibe. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. 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 And there's also a little bit of a trope that happens in anime, it happened in Firefly, of there's valuable property in a box, and it turns out to be a girl. So,
you know, it's so funny. It's been such a long time since I've sat down with these episodes. I obviously remembered once it happens, but on the train ride, I'm like, I think I remember there's a twist in that box.
They have some fun with underline and italicizing and bolding. We don't know what's in the box. It's a mystery.
Don't look.
Yeah. And then I feel like the episodes are connected in that in general for Clone Wars, they're pretty action packed. Like there's just a ton of screen time. That's just great action. And then both episodes are very, they're dark and murky, like literally. Right. Obviously, that's the nature of Dathomir, but you were describing the great dark purple, you know, subterranean crystal caves that's just got this great attitude or not attitude, aesthetic that matches what Asajj is going through of kind of this journey into the darkness of the soul to find out who she wants to be.
Yeah, the burst of hope, it comes very much at the end, and the rest of it is a bit of a dark and gray world with the beautiful purple and red of Dathomir in there as well. But yeah, it really makes it even more effective. It's perfect for the character, right? Perfect yeah. for Ventress to find herself in these two worlds in this story.
Yeah, yeah. So let's dive in. We always like to talk about the morals of the episode. So the first one is, one must let go of the past to hold on to the future. And the second moral is, who we are never changes. Who we think we are does. Did either of those speak to you?
They both work really well together, really well. They're pretty clear, but also leave some room for spiritual wandering and to find the answer that maybe best suits your needs. The first one must let go of the past, to hold on to the future, I think works just like, I love it. It's crisp. It's clear. And it's a lot of what's going on. I was a little obsessed with the second one the more I thought about it, though. Who we are never changes. Who we think we are does. I saw it a little bit of like the reverse Solo in a way. Like he's always thinking he's one thing, but he kind of deep down knows. And it's just kind of how you view yourself. It's this big kind of thing. And you know, Han, using the Han example, I don't think Han's heart ever truly changes. It's just who he thinks he is with or without that heart is what's in flux. So I saw some vibes there with that, and but it all flows into this trauma, processing the past. None of it easy. We're going to talk about that. But so therefore, both worked in well together. Really loved the first one.
Yeah, I really like them for how crisp they are in terms of reflecting what's going on in the episode and what's going on with Asajj working through her past and trying to figure out what is next. One must let go of the past to hold on to the future. I think that is a life lesson that a lot of people deal with. I think a lot mm-hmm. of people are dealing with it now, as there is just a lot of, you know, change and tumult in the world right now. So I think that's something that a lot of people are dealing with and looking at, of letting go of the past so you can figure out kind of what is next. The who we are never changes, who we think we are does. I love that, because some of these morals are pretty crystal clear, and some of them are like, I look at them like, yeah, and then I'm like, wait, no. And like, I can see this one a couple different ways, and it's the kind of thing that, you know, if you had the right group of people, I would just love to sit down at a bar with their pitcher of beer and about five people and go, okay, is this true or not? And you'd have a really interesting discussion that might end up being very joyful, or somebody might get real mad. And either way, it'd probably be fun. But the who we are never changes, who we think we are does. Like, the positive version of that to me is really powerful, of you can that maybe there are some intrinsic truths about yourself that you are too caught up in your fears about yourself to see, right? Like, I think this maybe relates to what Rey is going through in Rise of Skywalker, right? She's defined by her actions, and almost all of her actions come from a place of kindness and empathy, but then she gets wrapped up in the fear of what she might be, you know? So that makes a lot of sense to me. But who we think we are does. Obviously, it changes who we think you are, but who we are never changes. There's also a little bit of like, is that in conflict with the idea of evolving and changing?
And including letting go of the past. That would be part of it there. Now, and this is what I love. This is what I said. It's like they're both so crisp and clear, and yet you could sit down with that pitcher of beer or in the desert and ruminate on what they might mean for you at certain times in your life.
Yeah, so great morals when there's room for ruminating, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Well, let's then dive into then what these morals really mean for the episode. What do you think, Ken, were the big thematic ideas of this arc, and what kind of ideas are at stake? Where do you go with that?
Yeah, the big ones for me are letting go, and this idea of the past, and maybe even the dark side, as the past that doesn't let go. And maybe that's the thing with the past. And some other ones we can talk about, especially when Boba Fett enters the scene. But this letting go, and again, everything I'm about to say might occasionally sound like real simple life advice. It's never simple, right? And it's processing trauma and growing, or even just simply changing who we think we are. That's pretty hard. And Star Wars is never saying that it's easy. In fact, nothing here in these episodes is easy for Ventress. But I was moved by she's experienced this very traumatic life. But this is the beginning of her leap forward, and she doesn't quite even understand that or know that. And the past literally comes, you said it in your summary, the past literally is coming to attack her future. But even the future thinks she has at that moment with her sisters and reborn as a Night Sister, that isn't the future either. And even talk about some of the stuff with Rey, like her journey takes a few steps, you know, and she's looking back a little bit and it's time to move forward. And even then, you don't know, you get up those steps, you climb those steps and hold out that lightsaber. That's not the end that you're going to get. And so I think there's a lot of that with Ventress. And there's some stuff I have about Mother Talzin and all that stuff we can discuss here in a second. I also want to say I like the Night Sisters and I like Mother Talzin. So nothing I'm saying about to say about them is to be construed as negative or anything. I just think it's interesting that like Ventress thinks that's the next spot. She's breaking free from maybe one, kind of a prison of a life in service to Dooku, and is falling right into another one. And that's not necessarily the correct step. And that's just the step forward is how I kind of saw it. But I also, you know, I like Talzin.
Oh yeah. No, I'm very interested to discuss that. I agree with your big picture theme that, obviously the past is super present. I feel like there's a little bit of this sense that, the past is there and it is going to affect what happened. There's a little bit of like, you can't be totally defined by it. You can't necessarily find their way forward by going backward, which is maybe what you feel like Asajj is doing by just returning to the Night Sisters of like, there's a little bit of a, you can't go home again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love how in big, clear ways and in little ways, this feeling of like the past is real and you kind of got to deal with it. You got to move forward from it, but you also can't pretend that it didn't happen. The way that obviously Asajj dealing with her guilt about the Separatists coming there because of her. Going forward to the second episode, I think it's really telling that Asajj's choice in how to handle the heist really does seem to be triggered by her own past, by the girl throwing out at Asajj of like, you could never understand what it is to be taken. And basically the girl saying like, here, Asajj, stare out the window and contemplate your original trauma that set off all of your other traumas of being taken away from the Night Sisters. And then that person turned out to be okay and was killed. And then you met a Jedi and then that person was killed. And then you met Count Dooku and then he threw you out. Like, even then to just like little small things, right. There's a great line about Mother Talzin saying like, Dooku should be more careful making deals with witches when she pulls out the lock of the hair, right? Like there's that sense of like, even Dooku's, you know, can't outrun his past, you know?
Yeah.
The fact that Boba's just following in his father's footsteps, just this is preordained, this is who I'm supposed to be. There's just a lot of rhythm of people just sort of being unable to, or not even trying to outrun the past.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a little bit of that too. This idea of, what we want to be isn't exactly what we are yet. And there's still growth of Boba Fett fighting for the respect, fighting for this leadership position that he has technically, but he's kind of going about it the wrong way. He's often outmatched. He's not the boss he will be or wants to be. And eventually maybe he in Book of Boba Fett episode one goes, you remember that time on Corsite, the train? I wasn't the leader I was yet. And it's a lot about that. In there as well for me, that some of that Boba Fett stuff.
Absolutely. The moments of him really saying, I'm in charge, like they relate directly to what we're going to be seeing in Book of Boba Fett, according to the trailers of him trying to go like, no, I'm in charge of crap now. Yeah. I feel like one of the biggest things for me is just this big picture idea of identity, right? Of just this question of who does Asajj want to be? It's almost like she's just trying on nouns. Because she, through no fault of her own, she's been pulled through things and she's had the illusion that she's making choices. That's the way the dark side always is. It presents itself of like, look, everything around you has been trauma and pain and people betraying and lying, says Dooku to Asajj, which is like, that's the way the galaxy works. And you should be a part of the dark side because the dark side says that's the way everybody is. So you just be the most powerful. And now she's, of course, been thrown out of that world. Doesn't know what she wants to be, goes home to be a Night Sister. And the fact that it's a like a rebirth and they literally use the word baptism, right? Mm-hmm. Of like that she is becoming a true Night Sister. Mother Talzin even has that line about And then you will fulfill your destiny and become a true Night Sister, which is really kind of saying you weren't before.
Mm-hmm. Right. I actually, again, having not seen these episodes in a while, I was like, well, wait a second.
Yeah.
She already had on the uniform. She's already playing on the team.
Yeah. Mother Talzin also has this great line of you have your breath, your skill, and your sisters. You have everything needed to survive, mm-hmm. which I really like because Mother Talzin is this weird, ambiguous figure because she obviously works via the dark side. She yeah. is willing to reach out and kill. But we really only see her do it when she is crossed. Mm-hmm. And so for me, there is something that is very supportive in this first step of Asajj's journey of like, this is the place I got taken from. This is who I was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. I went out and I had all this trauma. I had all these choices that I didn't really fully make myself. And now I got nothing. So mm-hmm. I'm going to go home. And there's no judgment from Mother Talzin or any of the other Night Sisters. It's just, hey, welcome home, sister. Mm-hmm. Let's go through the rituals. You'll be one of us. Let's have a feast. You got community. So I feel like there's this tragedy where Asajj's going through just a repetition of the past of like, okay, maybe this is who I was always supposed to be. Get rid of the dark side noun, or not dark side noun, I guess. Get rid of the Sith noun, the apprentice noun, get rid of the separatist noun, and I'm back to my original noun. I am a Night Sister. And then immediately loses that identity as soon as she gets it in her mind. But you feel like there's something else going on?
Well, it's somewhat in line with what you're saying here. Now, also, I love the identity thing. I was going to put this in, I probably will mention in some of the comedy whimsy, but the second episode kind of begins with her almost going like, I guess for this mission, I'll play as a bounty hunter. Like maybe next time I'll be a sniper from the Imperials. Like she's just playing Battlefront, trying on new things to see how she can play, you know?
She's changing her appearance. Yeah. I'll be a battle droid sniper this time. Yeah,
exactly. I love what you're saying too about the Night Sisters and Mother Talzin. No questions asked. You're home. And that's the beauty of even the first time when she comes back. I always love her kind of falling into the arms of Talzin. It is a come home kind of scenario. But this time around, and, you know, I'm trying to maybe go into a little bit of what Katie Lucas put into that that first episode of you know, what of her own life? What is she trying to tell with this story, a character she, you know, Ventress, it means so much to her. I don't have those answers in front of me, so I'm just guessing. But to bring it to Mother Talzin, you kind of talked about it. They're offering all these things to her that are nice and warm and everything. But you said kind of stuck in the repeating patterns, right? Like paraphrasing you a little bit here. Mother Talzin to me is selling freedom to Ventress, but asking for even more allegiance or continued allegiance. There's even, you know, words and phrases during that ceremony, some stuff about Ventress says it, you know, loyalty, my heart, my life, or whatever it is. I forgot to write down that actual whole line there.
I think it's loyalty to Night Sisters, magics, and the old ways.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. That's one of them. And then I'm actually bummed to myself. It was a great line. But she Ventress chants something back in one of those scenarios. But all that to say, like, so I'm not pointing fingers at Talzin and saying you witch. She's not all wrong here because she is offering some of that. And it looks all good, and it feels all good to Ventress, but Talzin's talking about destiny. She uses that word. And to me, it's a destiny lacking choices at this point. Ventress is now, you're here, community, sisters, we're all around you, but your entire existence is for this, for us. And so, it's, like I said, it's not quite bad. It's not quite good. It's a repeating pattern. I'm glad you said that. That's kind of more the shorter version of what I felt. Ventress thinks she's moving forward. I did write it up. Goes through the ceremony. And she says, my loyalty, my life, but she's not dealt with what's going on inside her to take it to more of a inner spiritual kind of realm. Her past is still there. She's just trading one thing for another. And maybe that's no fault to Talzin and the Night Sisters. It's how they do things. And I think you're right. They sit over there in Dathomir. You leave us alone. We won't get involved with your war. Hey, maybe Star Wars wants them to choose a side. We get that. But I do agree. They ain't poking anyone. Don't poke us. But you know what I mean? So all that to say, it is kind of a repeating pattern. And that's where I felt watching what Talzin was saying and offering.
Yeah. Okay. I can definitely see that. I think there is this sense for me that's not even in the episode, but that if if Grievous and the Separatists didn't attack, or if they successfully repelled it, would Asajj eventually get anxious, like just being there, right? But I think what I'm really responded to is like Talzin and the Night Sisters. You know, they do dabble in the dark side. It's their planet's magics, and they're coded in all these horror ways, right? But unlike other people who are coded with dark side or you know, scary, they're not screaming at her because the plan failed, right? Like, she came back, she was welcomed with open arms. They're happy she was back. They came up with the plan with Savage Opress. It didn't work. Yeah. Some Night Sisters got killed. Nobody seems pissed, right?
Yeah, right, right.
And
yeah.
Everybody else in who even dabbles in the dark side in Star Wars would be mad and be telling you you're a failure and that. And there's just none of that. There's just like, you're back again. Good.
Yeah.
Why don't you stay? And then there's even at the end, when Asajj's, you know, failed again, not really through any fault of her own, if she's tried to repel the army, and Talzin appears to her in that spirit form. And again, there's no criticism. She just says, your destiny will always be linked with ours, but you have your own path to follow now. And that seems like Talzin being very zen of like, look, you are one of us, and that's always going to be a part of who you are, but you can't cling to the past. Times have changed now. Yeah. The Separatists won. So go find out who you are, kid.
Yes. Could it be safe to say that we got almost two versions of the past that you have to kind of reconcile and process and deal with? Dark side, this past that doesn't let go, as I said, you know, it's focused on revenge and hate. We know the dark side never forgets. It never heals. It just destroys. And you got the other side, which is probably a more healthy way of looking at it. Again, I'm not pointing any fingers at Talzin and the Night Sisters. I think you're right. That attack doesn't happen. They might be happy for a long time until Ventress says, maybe I want a new job. I don't know. I don't disagree.
They got some vengeance in them, too. If they had repelled the Separatists, they'd still probably try to kill Dooku with the doll eventually.
You know, I'm not saying even that's wrong. but I like that moment with Talzin. It is kind of, it's zen, it's stoic, it's Yoda saying, you know, keep your mind on where you are and what you're doing right now, what is happening. It's Leia saying, don't tell me, you know, what it looks like. Tell me what it is. And this is what it is. And Talzin's dealing with that in that same way and saying, hey, it's okay. It's okay. You have the strength to move forward, whether you know it or not.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, the time for vengeance will be later.
Yeah.
Talzin is keeping some things from her too, so I think maybe that, I don't know if maybe that is part of what you're like, ooh, let me you know, measure who Talzin really is, because Asajj tells her like, oh, it didn't work out with Savage Opress, and Talzin isn't like, yeah, no, he came back here and I gave him an assignment to find his brother, like
right, yeah.
She keeps that to herself. I think more to talk about an identity, but I want to dive into this other perspective because I'm really curious to get your opinion on it, and it relates to what we're talking about with who Talzin really is. I think I kind of, there's a big theme to me in both of these episodes about who do you answer to, right? Asajj, obviously, in the framework of the Sith and in the framework of the Separatists, she answered to Dooku and to Sidious, and Grievous was always, you know, competing with her of who's better and all that. And Mother Talzin does make such a big deal that Asajj will only need to answer to herself and her sisters. So she is kind of saying, like, you are part of us and you do have a community responsibility, but nobody else is going to boss you around. It's just what you want and what the community wants, right?
Yeah.
And then the way that Asajj eventually kind of, I think, finds herself is she goes through this trauma with the Separatist attack and with failing. She tries on this bounty hunter identity like she's LARPing or playing an RPG, like you said. But she gets this victory at the end of this battle where she's like, what even is this? What am I fighting for? What am I doing? I'm throwing people off a tram because I said I would. Okay. Mm-hmm. And money, that's great. I need that. But by the end, I feel like she kind of fulfills this vision that Mother Talzin gives her, because she chooses how to handle the bounty her own way, right? And it isn't like, I'm gonna throw into the light side and do what I think Obi-Wan Kenobi would do, right? And it's not I'm gonna kill them all and take it for myself. It is straight down the lane, right, of the middle, of her deciding what is right for her, and based on her own trauma, she's like, no way in hell I'm handing this girl over to anybody.
Yeah.
And then she gets there and is like, oh, this old creep wants her to be a bride. I really made the right decision.
Yeah.
You know, so she rescues Pluma, but still takes some money from Pluma.
Yeah.
She screws over Boba, puts him in a box, chokes him out and puts him in a box, but still leaves him credits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She just takes the total middle path that is her in that moment, all of her life experiences going, if I get to decide everything that happens in this situation, then I'm going to decide this, this, and this. Ah, that feels nice to not answer to anybody else, but just only I choose what happens right now.
This may be a moment of pure balance in Star Wars. A little light, a little dark. No, I agree with it. I put down the note of who is asking for your trust along the lines of who are you going to serve or who's asking you to serve. And at the end of the day, Ventress, you know, it comes up a lot. Boba Fett kind of even says directly to her, you know, hey, you don't trust us? Come on. Who are you going to trust? And I do take Talzin's last little speech, that spirit speech there, if you want to call it that. I do think Ventress takes that and takes that to heart and moves that forward.
Yeah.
And that's the better version of Talzin's advice for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I love that it ends with her not just going like, yeah, I guess this bounty hunter thing works, you know, and mm-hmm. them trying to go like, all right, I guess you're pretty good. we all got thrown off the train. Do you want to join us? And she's like, no. And do you think you're better than us is so great. And her response, once I was just like you, but I'm not that person anymore. Now I have a future. Mm-hmm. I really felt that is like, this is maybe like one of the first times where she's like, I just made whatever choice I did on the bounty hunting this bounty hunting excursion because Dooku's not going to have an opinion. Mother Talzin's not going to have an opinion. There's nobody over me to have an opinion about it. And this is the first time she's experienced that where she feels like she has a future because she can actually chart it herself.
Yeah, love it, man. I really love it. And it lines, I guess I will pull some of Katie Lucas's life story. Adopted into this great family. His father follows in his footsteps, is a great Star Wars writer, and she needs to strike out on her own, make her own choices. I could see the connections there. And again, I don't have any magazine interviews or anything in front of me. I'll wait for Jennifer Landa to dig up some more wonderful insight into Katie Lucas's writing. But that's and it is truly this big burst of hope at the end of this these two kind of intense dark episodes.
Yeah, and I love that it is this weird hope because it's kind of like that classic walking off into the sunset except for it's a dark sky.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
In shadows, I have a future and it's at night.
I don't know what that is. She still got those two red blades. I don't know the future. We know a little bit. We know where it ends up. But yeah.
Yeah, we do know the good and bad of Asajj's future. This theme of who do you answer to, I feel like this is Asajj's arc, but in terms of both identity and who do you answer to, that's really reflected by Boba. You know, Boba is he's really trying to be somebody. He's trying to be the leader, right? But he is being judged by his appearance and his stature. You know, Asajj's cutting line, no one of true importance would lower themselves to trade with a mere boy. Like, damn, Asajj. But that who do you answer to thing, right? He's acting like he's the leader, right? He's in a little bit of a similar position with Asajj where, hey, this crew seems to answer to him no problem, you know?
Right.
But his previous mentors, you know, his father and Aurra Sing, they're gone and this is him stepping up, but he's not there yet, right? Like, he's even got that line when they're being asked to guard the box, he says to the person giving him the instructions, "You make the rules, I follow them." Like, that's that's not a real strong leader calling the shots. And he yells, "I've been in charge of this whole operation," then gets just force choked. He wants to be in charge, but he is still answering to everyone around him.
Yeah. Yeah, and fascinating. You know, you mentioned something that I popped in my head because Ventress is you know absolutely just not taking anything from him. But Bosk, you know, big old tough, strong lizard man Bosk is kind of like, hey, that's our boss. You know, I'll protect him. And so, Boba's not doing all things wrong. He's almost there. Like I said, he's not quite the boss he wants to be or will be maybe one day.
Yes, but he will get there eventually, right? Any other specific ideas before we talk about the big picture of Star Wars?
No, that's already some big stuff, so let's get to the bigger picture.
Yeah, so we always like to talk about how the specific ideas in an arc tie to the larger story or morality or perspective of Star Wars. So what do you have there? What are your thoughts, Ken?
I just kind of started from this point of we got to change choices and the roles we play in it all. And going back to what you're talking about, Ventress just trying on these different hats to get what's right. And at the end of the day, it's her hat, right? And how this power of change, the power of choices, and how the Star Wars is just continuously telling us that and continuously putting that out there. That's why every time that word destiny pops up, my ears pop up. Like, well, wait, what's your thoughts on destiny? What do you actually think about destiny and how much choice is involved in it? And I think this one, where this ends up, it is, again, we know there's more storytelling with Ventress to come, both in this series, in Dark Disciple. I still think there's room for a Ventress story of some sort. You know, a one-off, something like that. There's a lot of time we're not spending with her. But
she's got a good chunk of just bounty hunting in here.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And where this ends is it's a Star Wars, maybe if it's not a full redemption story, it's a redirection story. It's a true Star Wars redirection story because of the change choices and the roles that we want to play within that journey.
I think there's a great compare contrast to be made between Asajj and Maul because they have a mm-hmm. similar path where they are thrown out of the Sith circle. Maul is, of course, a full apprentice, and Asajj is only kind of dabbling in Dooku doing like, yeah, no, don't worry, eventually I'll kill my boss.
Yeah,
you'll be the apprentice. But in a similar fashion, they're sort of raised to put all that focus and hate the Jedi and we'll have power, and then they're out of it. And Asajj goes through lots of changes, finds lots of other parts of herself, finds other things to care about, has an epiphany about what was done to her. And Maul's just never manages to change up to his second death, his second and final death at the hands of
Yeah, literally. I mean, right down to the footsteps he takes. So true. Yeah. And again, none of this is easy. None of this is Star Wars telling you it's easy, but I love that you drew it to Maul. It is truly a tale of two choices.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think this, all of the themes in this arc remind me of a lot of Star Wars stuff everywhere, but a lot of what the sequel trilogy is wrestling with, in my opinion, saying ultimately of like, yeah, of course you can't just get caught in the past. You can't just repeat the cycles. You need to learn from the past, but you shouldn't ignore the past because there's lessons there and there's great things to be a part of in the past, to take forward as a part of you, as long as you aren't entirely defined by the past and are still aware that you are this person in the present, this unique being making your own choices that are informed by the past, but not entirely defined by the past. Like it feels like very similar messages.
It's all about those steps forward and how you take them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I always like to note when the big theme for me in Star Wars of the organic and the flowing versus the rigid and mechanical pop up. And it's not as explicit in this episode, but it is just really fun that the first episode is, you know, the marching, stomping machinery of droids against like witches who are so organic they have mummified themselves hanging from trees.
Yes.
You know, and then the second episode has that very classic Star Wars, like here's a technology. Here's literally a train that is on not an actual physical track, but a kind of track going only one direction. And it is attacked by, you know, people riding natural beasts at one with the environment, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Scary beast.
Yeah. Yeah. And final thing for me is that you made the great reference to Mandalorian. There's some great solo things going on here. It was like, hey, wait, am I watching a scene where marauders with secretly good intentions attack a train?
Yep. Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
It was very, very solo. Yeah. Emphasis Nest, where are you? Other thoughts for yourself?
No, but even in that, you know, the use of the marauders thing and, you know, not the first time, not the last time, for sure in Star Wars, is definitely Star Wars asking it to. It's like we always say, Star Wars wants to ask why. It even wants its characters to ask why. Well, why this is happening? What's going on? And it's a little bit of indicting the world of bounty hunters. You scoundrels only out for money. Look a little closer. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Bossk probably does not have a great moral core.
Don't think he does.
Great character, great blaster, but not a great moral core. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that about Bossk. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back to discuss some of our favorite moments, action, comedy, connections to other lore, all that kind of stuff in just a moment.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the Great Clone Wars arc, the fall and rise of Ventress, as we've decided to call it right here during the broadcast. We like to talk about some favorite moments, so let's get into action. Ken, what were some favorite action moments in these two action-packed episodes?
Yeah, I started. You've always been so wonderful with our scene-by-scene titles. Palpatine's box of seduction? What'd you call it there?
Manipulation.
Manipulation,
I think, yeah.
And seduction. Yeah. There you go. Dexter's Diner of Wisdom. Right. I accidentally stumbled onto a bunch of those there. So I'm calling it Talzin's Attack of Bubbles. Is the first big action moment.
When there's the initial attack from the Separatists, and she surrounds herself in a giant green energy bubble and then shoots lightning blasts.
That's it. That's the one. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
That started.
Yes. Like, I want a dark light poster of that, you know?
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. This would make a great heavy metal cover album from like 78. Because I got to tell you, totally familiar with the general plot of this first episode in particular, but when the attack starts coming in and the clones are there, and obviously it's reminiscent of Battle of Naboo stuff from Phantom Menace, I was getting geeked up, man. Like when Thousand's like kind of like telling them all to get ready, and I'm like, we got a straight up big Star Wars brawl coming, and that seeing that just her floating in that safety bubble, shooting out witch powers is really cool.
It's really great. And just like, yeah, absolutely. This era of Clone Wars, like, we don't care. are enjoying ourselves and having fun. Mm-hmm. I like the moment right before that, kind of the very beginning of the battle. We had just met the Night Sister Karras, who is like being really friendly to Asajj and really welcoming her at the feast. So we get the double whammy of this character we just met, who is kind to Karras, to Asajj, being killed.
Yeah.
And then the fact that she is crushed by some Night Sister statue that fell from a Separatist bomb. It's so compact. It's so like, hey, Asajj, did you just make a friend? Did you just get reattached to your culture? Okay. Well, they're both gone.
Yeah.
So we're going to destroy your buildings and your family. It's brutal and very efficient.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Yeah. So moving on from horror and from green bubbles, where do you go next?
Well, we'll get to some horror again. Yeah. The battle starts. Ventress leading the charge. It's a real good image. Her, the blades out, kind of pointed down, charging in. And that leads to eventually a beautiful double stab of two battle droids. It was just epic. Great move. Double tap the X, hold down the R1, and you got that power.
That was a beautiful double stab. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's a ton going on in here. I really liked the B2, the super battle droids stomping out. And being lowered from their carriage. That was great.
Yeah, I did too, right? Yeah, total play in the Battle of Naboo stuff, obviously. But yeah, just loved it. Like a real upgrade. Good move, Separatist. Wait a minute. I'm not supposed to be. Okay.
Yeah, and very interesting. There's one battle droid comedy moment that I noted, but it was extremely light. Some people would probably not even call it comedy, but it made me laugh. But in this major battle, Ken, like there's no wacky, I just got a promotion, right?
Right.
It is a tonal shift that to keep this, the horror and the seriousness of what's happening being the only tone.
They did a really good job on it. I mean, this is a horror movie we're watching in this first one here. They're keeping that all the way through. And, you know, I don't know, a good horror film, I guess, might have some comedy, but I just, absolutely. it would have been out of place. And it felt, you know, battle droids battle a reputation of not being, you know, something to take serious. That is not the case here. All the way through, they are a threat. They are deadly.
Yep. Overwhelmed by the numbers, I think, is great in this episode. Next thing for me is like, my Lord, the Rise Dead Sisters awake.
I called it my favorite horror moment, not even action, just a straight up horror film moment.
Yeah, I mean it is. I mean it's action in that things are happening. You're right. But it is, you know, hearing old Daka chant and realizing that the mummified remains are you know infused with their own spirits. One would imagine.
Yeah.
And just everything from like the bursting forward to the ones like rising up and the screaming. I think, you know, that's it's so effective. And the reason that I was watching this the first time, going, oh, the Separatists are done.
Yeah. It's scary. I mean, it's you know, I'm not shivering in my boots on my couch watching this on a Sunday afternoon, but it's scary stuff. If I was a youngster, that would have frightened me.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some more moments for you?
One of the undead sisters just rips off the head of a tank droid, one of the battle droids in the tank. Just brutal. It's a battle droid. I got to imagine there's some feeling chips in there, I guess. I don't know. But just brutal. Just brutal.
Yeah, it is pretty nasty. I think perhaps one of my favorite images that I forgot was in this because I so remember the battle on Dathomir. This is kind of an action image because, hey, somebody's dying. But the image of Talzin bursting out of Dooku's gut like a magic hologram of death.
Yes. Yes. So I'll jump in with the three other categories, and then I want to discuss Talzin's move. I have Talzin's boils of doom, Talzin's upset stomach of taunts, and then Dooku's up check of relief. All right. Going on there.
That's right. Dooku vomits magic.
He does. Upchuck relief here. Yeah.
I have a little magic in my gut.
Yeah, but Tolson's upset stomach of taunts, man. That was the imagery on everything about it. It was great. That was great stuff.
Yeah, it was just so powerful that you got that spirit of like, okay, well, this is her, a part of her magic that is like, it's that's really her, like inside him, pulling on things. Like her spirit is inside him, ripping things up and just burst out. And like, by the way, I'm in here doing this to you.
No, I took it. It took it as both completely magical and a little literal, a little bit literal,
a little literal. Yeah, absolutely. This is a moment in the battle that I really liked. It's a weird moment, but it's just such perfect kind of evolution of Asajj's ability. She's always been very acrobatic, but when she decides like, oh, no, I'm going forward, I'm going to confront Grievous. And she does that long hopscotch over the droid's heads on the droid's heads.
Yes. Right. Totally.
I really, really like that.
I love that. Good call.
Good. Any more from that first episode for you?
Just running through. No, that's the fight with Grievous is great. Two characters, six blades. That's a great fight. Great look all the way through. When he's got all four and she's blocking him with two and reds and greens and blues, it was a rainbow of fight. And I like it.
Yeah, I really like that. It calls back to the competition that they've had in a couple episodes explicitly. I like that it is so in character for Grievous that, you know, Asajj makes him that classic deal of it. How about just the two of us fighting? Whoever wins will win and the other's army will stand down.
Yeah.
And Grievous is like, sure. In the moment Asajj gets the upper hand, he's just like, open fire.
Yes. What a cheat. What a coward.
He's a weasel and a coward always. So painful that it doesn't work out for Asajj, so moving on for me to that second episode, there's so much on that long sub-tram battle that I really love, so I just wanted to pick out a few to kind of hold myself in check. I really like Dengar planting bombs on people. Like that's also a weasel move. I think
it is, but I called it Dengar's explosive win.
I thought you said explosive wind for a moment. It's like, did I miss did I miss some Dengar flatulence? No.
The way Dengar ends up in life, maybe that's the case later on. But here he's crisp and clean and winning.
Yep. He's looking pretty pretty fine and sharp. Yeah, no, I think there's something about it, like it, just the way it was shot of like when the Marauders, the Cage Warriors first jump on and Dengar's really doing his best to just like kind of classically fight, block, punch, blow, kick, right? And like he's getting a little overwhelmed. So he's like, what if I stick a bomb on your gut?
Yeah, love that. And overall, you mentioned the kicking and the punching and everything. You know, we see by Clone Wars Season 7, they've got, they're using different technology to actually do like motion capture, and it looks beautiful. This stuff looks really good we're a few years behind now, and animation technology moves forward, leaps and bounds at a quick pace sometimes, but really good for an episode that had to have some detailed moves. It came across really well.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the other sequences I really liked is, I forgot there's a great sequence of Boba working his way through the train. You know, he's got the helmet on, he's got the double blasters. He is, you know, he's really sharp about his angles of like knowing when somebody's behind him, above him. He's blasting away, but he's also like jumping and kicking. I think I always remember this one as this episode where Boba Fett's trying to be in charge, but basically gets his ass handed to him, which he does at the end. But I forgot that there's this great moment, which I want, is to see the beginnings of the utter badass he's going to be.
No, he's skilled, right? He's good. He's really good. And I think that was important to see. It's just everything else has got to come together for him, but there's a reason he is who he is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really felt that there and I liked it. I also just liked the, I want to shout out a specific moment, but I really liked the escalation with Asajj, where at first you're just like, all right, I'll try just punching. And then she goes, I'll give a little force push. Like, all right, enough of this BS. The lightsaber's coming out. Yeah. And by the time she's taken down the brother, Krizmo, it's just Asajj unleashed. And the sheer a volume of times that she gut and kidney punches Krizmo. I found strangely delightful because it's really Asajj being like, hey, wait, I am the most powerful here and I'm going to show you all.
Yeah, because sometimes I was watching her, I was like, you know, you've got the force at you. Nope, keep punching. Keep punching. It's working. It's working.
Maybe they're force punches. Who knows?
Could be.
So I cut myself off there because I could do so much more. Mm. How about yourself? What are some other moments?
A couple other moments for me. And you're right, a ton all the way through this here. I called this one Ventress's Blade of Rebuff. When she takes that blade and chops all three of those blades off at the same time. It's a comical moment, too. Lats snake toss. I don't have a cute name, but just when she's got taking everyone out with the snake and then having that used against her and Heisinger when Chrisma defeats both of them. And I thought that was just a good setup of how dangerous it was and how that would lead to her and Heisinger's defeat later on. Very good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I want to keep my branding up as a fan of somebody who likes it when people fall from things. And the volume of people thrown from a train is delightful.
Yeah, can we? I didn't put this in comedy moments. I love that. It's almost like it's a game show. It's Star Wars Squid Game. I don't know. So when everyone falls off, Dengar and Bossk, everyone, they're just like, Dengar literally goes, poodoo. And they wait, and then no one tries to rejoin the fight. They're all back in the hangar, waiting at the break room, taking a sip of high C and orange slices, waiting for everyone to come back. Like, rejoin the fight. Get up there.
I love that the shots are all, they're all like, no, that train's moving too fast. You know how fast I have to run? Not. Yeah, no.
Super caterpillars. just get on. Keep going. Walk at least.
I would love to play this. I actually wouldn't love to play this video game level. I'd be frustrated by it. But it's a good video game level of just, can you stay on the train?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As someone who's lost many shootouts on Red Dead Redemption on a train, I don't know if I could do well in this, but I'd love to try.
Yeah, a lot of train throwing and a lot of giving up from the bounty hunters.
Yeah.
That's a great segue into our favorite moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness. What jumped out to you here?
Jumping around. Good. So dancing witches. I wrote down dancing witches. And this is just background animation. I'm not making fun of anyone's skills or what they had to do. But I just love that because, you render these characters, you put them there and you want to say, all right, the witches are celebrating and dancing. But they're all dancing by themselves. And it looks like everyone is tripping in Joshua Tree. Like, it's not quite a rave. It's not a rave. There, you want to go out to Joshua Tree, take some peyote, and discover ourselves. Like, and it actually works for the Night Sisters. It works.
I think that might be pretty accurate. Like, there's a lot of, quote unquote magics going on. And I'm sure that feast is not just food. And it does look like the Night Sisters are maybe dancing as though they are all listening to their own music.
Yes. Yes, one's definitely got playing tracks from Lady Gaga's Joanne. The other one's got some some new Britney coming back, and someone's listening to the Grateful Dead. Clearly,
yeah, clearly. Some great tracks on Joanne. I'm gonna see if they sync up to the Night Sisters.
Yeah,
One of the first things that jumped out at me is I just love this turn of phrase and the delivery and the perspective from Mother Talzin when she is saying to Asajj that, you don't have to worry about any of that stuff anymore. You don't have to worry about Dooku's absurd war.
Yeah, right.
The whole thing just has this vibe that adds to me of like, yep, the Night Sisters and Mother Talzin, they will put their finger on the scale. If somebody crosses them, they will use their magic and they will obsessively go after vengeance. But other than that, they're just like, what are you fighting for?
Yeah.
We got magic. We got dancing.
Yeah.
We got a whole society. We got nice buildings. We got hidden caves. This is great. Why is everybody running around making an ass of themselves?
I'll fight for that side.
Yeah. So this cracked me up. Dooku's absurd war. It just got a little bit of that, like, what are you running around yelling about?
Yeah.
That deflates him in a way. Another one for me, this is one comedy moment. I rewound to catch something else, and then I noticed it of when Dooku gives Grievous the assignment and Grievous is stomping towards his ship, there's one B1 droid with him who's just jogging to keep up with Grievous.
Hey, boss. Hey, boss. Hey, boss.
Exactly. It's not like a march like they normally do.
Yeah.
It's like that droid. It's like some rom-com with a, mean boss in the fashion world. And the assistant's like, I'm trying to keep up with her.
Love it. Absolutely great.
What are some more for you?
Dooku's sitting there in his command center. Boils of doom start popping up on his forehead. He's falling to the ground, flailing about. And his guard droids don't even move. No, they don't even question it. They're just like, all right, he's having a time. Call someone, call a medic. I don't call Palpatine. What are you going to do? You got these droids. They're just like, well, eyes on the door, eyes on the door. Maybe someone's coming in. I don't know. I thought that was really funny. Just a little background thing. Doesn't matter to the plot at all. I love seeing Dooku writhe in agony and his droids do nothing.
Yeah. I mean, it would be funny if they had like tried to do something. It's like, what should we hit?
Yeah. Is there a reset button? I don't know what to expect, but it was just hilarious. They're doing their job. They're like they're guarding a Buckingham Palace.
They're not moving for nothing. I wonder if they've been instructed, like, if it seems like it's force crap, don't worry about it. Because there's nothing you can do.
Nothing you can do.
I also like Mother Talzin's line of he should be more careful in making deals with witches.
Yes. Well,
it's so great in the lock of hair.
Yeah, I mean, that we did not previously see that, right? In the other episodes, he didn't cut off a lock of hair. Did I miss that? Or is this
You know, I meant to look that up because I am 50-50. While you're talking, I'll try to see if I can verify or not that moment.
All right, that's great. There's some other, like, jump into the second episode, and feel free to jump back to the first one if you get some. Adventures in Chalmers is great, and when she kills her harasser at the bar there, saying, I'm not much of a talker, there's a perfectly timed, just giant laughs in the background, as if everyone's, like, tuning in and like, that's a great line for against the guy she just killed. It's amazing. And that's what I would want Chalmers to be. Right. If it's going to scare me and you growing up about we can't go into bars because they're dangerous because of old Luke's treatment there, that's what I want Chalmers to be.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, this was a great Chalmers appearance because it is just kind of quick and perfunctory. If you weren't super paying attention, you because they don't do like, hey, it's Tatooine. I mean, like, they're Jawas. So, yeah, I guess that is Tatooine. And it is pretty clearly a cantina, but they're not heavy handed about it. Right. It's just. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I right away, I love that moment where Ventress walks in and just says, prow, straight up.
Yes.
Because I love any time that a specific booze gets mentioned and established in Star Wars, and I totally forgot that there was a clear name of a booze established here, and that it is the utter opposite of Luke's experience where she knows exactly how to order, right?
Yes, and Ventress is the type of friend I need to go into a bar with sometimes where I generally nowadays can handle myself in a bar okay, but I like that person who's like, no, you order over here, you know?
Yeah.
I have such anxiety about it. You've been around me. Sometimes I over-explain to other people, like, here, let me tell you how this is going to be in here, even though maybe you're a regular at the bar. I get so caught up on that. I was really impressed. Ventress was like, I know what to do, what to drink, and how to get it.
Yep. Exactly. No questions asked. And I was torn about whether to put this in, but I think the bar patron's name is Oked. Just how awful and clumsy his, what's a pretty bald babe like you doing in a desert like this? Like, you needed to say bald?
Yep. Look, we do not condone his actions. You youngsters, be better in your behavior. He got what he deserved. I also love the line is kind of wonderfully awkwardly funny and inappropriate, but also it's like suddenly the voice, I don't know who voiced it. It's like in a 1940s film, you know? Yeah, what is a beautiful bald babe like you with a bar like this? Yeah, it was almost mid-Atlantic at Star Wars, and I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was very well done, including the murder.
Yeah. And then my favorite, the follow-up of compliments to the lizard in the back is low-key one of my favorite Star Wars lines I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, no, that is very, very good.
Yeah.
Moving on then for me from that great bar scene, because I could go on forever. Do you have any more in the bar?
The final one is we talked about it in a more serious way, but I do like Bosk asking Ventress if she's a bounty hunter, like she's about to play a game. It really comes across like, oh, bounty hunter, huh? Like, what is there only three classes in Star Wars? Jedi, Sith, bounty hunter?
Yeah, it really is like, yeah, no, I haven't never considered that one. Yeah, yeah. It really is like, I usually play as a mage. Okay, all right. I am not finding any confirmation about the hair, because she has a meeting in person with Dooku in the previous arc when she's selling him on the possibility of of a Zabrak assistant.
Right.
But I can't remember if the I'm not finding any confirmation. Well,
I have to believe there's something sneaky that happened, because I just can't imagine Talzin going, great, Count, give me a lock of your hair, and him going, that seems normal. Like, I got to imagine if some other way, but who knows?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, she got his hair in a previous dealing, says entry on Wikipedia. Okay. There you go. Dealing. Whether she snuck it or whether he made the poor choice to give it to her, didn't work out well for him when he's got a Mother Talzin in his gut.
Not at all. Yeah.
As I vomited out. So a couple other moments, in that second episode, I like when Ventress first meets Boba and Boba asks her name and she says, I don't have a name. He says, so it's going to be like that, huh? It's just a great, great vibe of, like, you know, we know exactly where Ventress is coming from. And for Boba, it's just like, ah, another person being difficult. Fine.
Ventress has, and I mean this in a wonderful way, she has a little bit of the, a little bit different new girl at school vibe, you know, like she's moved up. She's going to try your cheerleading only because you don't have a dance team, but we don't know what to think of her yet.
She does absolutely have that very, it is a stereotype into the new person at school, but it's an understandable human thing of like, I kind of want to be a part of the team. I kind of want to have friends, but every time I've tried it, I've been betrayed. So the only way I feel comfortable trying to have friends is being an ass to them.
Yeah. And look, you're going to love her in the third act. Don't you worry. Third act of the film, you're on her side.
Yeah, exactly. In the weird delivery of Major Ragoso, when he says, please allow me the pleasure of explaining the mission.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love the design of those characters. Kind of vaguely whale mouth like.
Balugans. So, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of designed to be not liked or trusted. Just everything about them.
Exactly. A couple more for me. I like Dengar's really awful. Hello, darling. Looks like we're securing the back platform together. It's like almost those words almost sound like they could add up to something like exciting and sexy. And like, No.
I think Bosk says at one point, "Shut up, Dengar." And I just think that's his life. That's Dengar's life.
It really is. Shut up, Dengar.
Yeah.
Final moment for me. There are a lot of little good ones because Ventress is just on fire. I could have written down every line of Ventress in the back half of this episode. But there is a pitch perfect reaction when the lead Belugan, I don't have it in front of me, and that one's really hard to remember. Otaka blank, out of blank. When the revelation, she's already made her choice, right? Mm-hmm. That she's not handing over this girl, just some rando.
Yeah.
Ventress knows the score, right? But then it's confirmed, right? It's my bride here, and it's so gross. But Ventress's pitch perfect reaction of like, of course.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, ugh, bride. It's so painful and it's so worldly.
Yeah.
And there's so obviously these episodes, the previous arc that really developed Ventress, this arc, you know, written by Katie Lucas, written by a woman with I interpret as a viewer, a woman's perspective. There's a lot about the Night Sisters and Ventress that really has that. Look, we know the score and we know how awful women can be treated. And it's so small. It's so subtle, but it just speaks volumes to me the way Ventress reacts to that.
100%. 100%, which is one of the just absolute wonderful things about what Katie Lucas did with this character, taking it from a very cool, double-bladed red Sith kind of cool killer. We love that. Making it so much more and putting so much of her own life and thoughts and perspective into it. It is very clear.
Yeah, yeah. And it's one of those like kind of dark moments that made me laugh because it's cathartic, right?
Yeah.
Because there's no shock, there's no hoarder. It's just like, of course, this son of a...
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, that's what he's about, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
anymore. I'm sure you've got some lighter funny lines than that. So what are your other comedy lines?
Careful of who you call, of who calls others marauders, is what I said. Careful of who calls others marauders, because Major Rigoso and Tobias Beckett are on record of saying they're just marauders, and they not only weren't right, shouldn't have been trusted in the end, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that is exactly right.
Yeah, and then finally I mentioned but Dengar yelling poodoo. I mean, you know, it was the McClunky of its time.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think that is a good poodoo. We'll get into it. We'll get into it because we're going to talk about Cannon and Laura. Mm-hmm. I got too excited to talk about Dengar, but we'll talk about Dengar a little bit. Let's talk about some favorite Cannon and Laura connections to other stories. Mm-hmm. A couple things that I have written down right away off the bat when Dooku is giving his assignment and he says, go there and wipe the witches out, all of them.
Yep.
Do you think that he just naturally talks like that, or do you think he's trying to quote his boss, Darth Sidious?
I think it's a little bit of the Sith playbook. Like he's heard Sidious play this, say this, or heard of it. Like they're saying, like, then I said, wipe them out. All of them. And Dooku's like, oh, that's great. Yeah, and I'm going to try to be the tough Sith Lord that the world needs to fear.
Yeah, all of them. Do you? Is that repetition okay for you?
Totally okay with me. Yeah. And you know, you and I have, you know, been talking, and you were tracking kind of that season one, season two, what Filoni calls, we're just a bunch of fans writing Star Wars type of vibe that pops up in the show a lot. I still think it's present at times in Clone Wars, and it just makes sense. It's the only thing we had, right? We weren't seeing movies or anything else and talking about too much nostalgia. We just were seeing this, and it was a lot more fun at the time. I'm happy where we are now as a Star Wars fan, obviously. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff didn't rub me the wrong way. Back then. Doesn't rub me the wrong way now, but even back then it was like, it was a chuckle. It was a cool. It was like, oh yeah, I've heard that before.
Yeah. And there's some of those season one, season two episodes where they're trying to keep, I've got a bad feeling about this. And almost every episode, either Wilhelm screams, you know, everywhere, and a lot of different callback lines. And then it does thin out. And then when they're there, I think they hit harder, right? Like when you just got a poodoo in all of them.
Yeah.
Then they hit harder. Another thing was I thought this when I watched the episode, and then I verified it, that the awful machines, the defoliator tanks, that is what really puts the Night Sisters in harm's way, that is indeed a Locke Durd's weapon from the Defenders of the Peace episode in season one of Clone Wars.
It is. Good pull. Yeah, and it's really effective. Like, you look at it, it is a weapon of war that is not pretty. I like the use of it, though.
It's so in the great Star Wars vein of this machine just destroying, you know, nature.
100%. It effective in the sense of, like, yeah, you're scared of it. You're rooting against it.
Yeah, and you extra feel it because the Night Sisters are so attached to, you know, their environment.
It's particularly cruel, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's just Locke Durd. such a weird, I believe, one-off villain, at least on screen.
Yeah.
That it is weird to be haunted by the legacy of Locke Durd in this episode.
That's great.
So this story with Talzin, of her seeming to kind of disappear into a spirit form and survive the massacre that way, if anybody is listening and does not know, I'm sure many of our listeners do, that storyline and Talzin's efforts for revenge against the Sith, that all resolves in the comic book Star Wars Darth Maul, Son of Dathomir, which was one of the few things that got pulled back into canon. It got republished by Marvel, so it is relatively accessible. And I think, Ken, when we get to its point in the Clone Wars, we should maybe talk about that comic. What do you think?
Yeah, we should take a swing through it. Indeed, it is very Clone Wars. You know, you're like, oh, this is storyboards for an episode. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And just so much happens in it. And it really is the resolution of a lot of these episodes that I'm glad that this story is out there. But I wish we could get animated versions of it.
Agreed.
And then, of course, these episodes set up really a ton for the video game Jedi Fallen Order. Right. This massacre is what the character Marin survives. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I thought about that a few times watching this.
Yeah, did you enjoy doing that? Because I know you maybe struggle with the gameplay sometimes, but you like the story of Jedi Fallen Order. Like many of us, you really like the character of Marin. Did you enjoy thinking, where's Marin? Where's she hiding?
Yeah, no, I did. A little bit, you know, who's hiding behind the tree, you know, and how she's running off. And I love that kind of storytelling and who else survived and all that kind of, yeah. And going back to visit Dathomir. Yeah, yeah, I've said before, yeah, the gameplay, Fallen Order, some of the things in it aren't my favorite, but the story and the story of trauma and get through it is so good. And the character and Marin's one of the best in that video game. Looking forward to more. So yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit more about the aftermath of that.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be some great Star Wars storytelling. And then we go back to Tatooine, right? You've got some Jawas pointing at vehicles and saying Utini.
Yes.
is an Utini just always welcome?
Absolutely is always welcome. Absolutely. If I see a Jawa and I don't hear Utini, then what are we doing here?
What are we doing here? And then we talked a little bit about Chalmun's Cantina. Looks like Zutton Snaggletooth is hanging out there. We've got a brief Embo sighting and his Anuba Merrick, which is great. The Anuba Merrick will feature more in a future Embo episode in a future season. But then for me, like the big canon connection, Ken, that I wanted to talk to you about is that at Chalmun's Cantina, you are guaranteed that if there's a murder, music will pause for a moment.
It's a very attentive music scene there.
How do you feel about that? I mean, there's nothing in the way it's shot or framed that is trying to make you go, it's like when Obi-Wan Kenobi did it, right? But it is. Right. It's a lightsaber at the bar. The music stops. Everybody's awkward about it. And it starts up again.
Yeah, I mean, hear me out. This visit to Chalmun, especially when it happened in season four, we hadn't gone there before, right? To my knowledge. Again, trying to remember, mm-hmm. we've covered a lot of episodes, hadn't spent a lot of
Baron Papanoid.
Baron Papanoid, you're right. We hadn't spent too much time there, and it just kind of shows up, and not a lot is called out to it. You know what I mean? Like, it isn't, you either pick it up or you're not. You pick up the booth that they're sitting in or you don't. And so even the music and kind of repeating the beats, I like the way they presented in this episode.
Yeah, I love the idea that it's kind of standard because like, well, you know, maybe the gig's over. So just pause for a second. Like,
yeah,
we're all good.
All right, cool. Yeah.
And pick it up. It's a very impressive band that can do that. Yeah, I also wanted to talk about young Dengar and just the vibe there, you know. I think growing up, I liked Dengar. He's one of the action figures. He's one of the bounty hunters. Cool. And then as I got older and people were like, he's kind of just dumpy and he looks like he's got a head wound. What's the deal with him? So then to see here, young Dengar, how do you feel about that?
I actually really love it, especially digging into it a little bit, looking on some of the trivia gallery stuff on StarWars.com, how George kind of was behind this idea of going, no, it wasn't a head wound that he wrapped badly. It was like a turban. It was part of him. And this is the younger version of him. And Dengar, I think there's a special place in a lot of our hearts because Dengar for our generation, Joseph, is one of those early names you learn, right? It is
right.
You wow people with knowledge going, his name is Dengar. You're not going to win any trivia contests later on in life with that. But there's something, especially now and going to 2019 and Rise of Skywalker, where, you know, you're led to believe that is a very, changed and modified Dengar at the bar there.
Yeah, Rothgar Deng, I believe,
right,
is the name.
That's a long life with a lot of changes. And to go back to the beginning, it's bittersweet. You know, I want better for Dengar. But the way he acts, Simon Pegg does a great job with the voice. You know, you can see you got a lot of bad things coming and maybe you deserve some of it.
Yeah. I liked putting I read that trivia gallery thing too, of like, Luke's going, it's not a head wound. It's a fashion choice. Put some, some designs on it. So that's what it looks like. And he's got similar armor, but I think a part of what it is for me is like the choice to slim him down. Right.
Right.
And make him just really does seem like, hey, I'm young and I'm spry and I'm with it and I'm flirting. And then just like, oh man, I had a rough life, you know, like everything from his face to his posture, to the condition of his armor. It just looks like I am not body shaming Dengar.
No, but
narratively it looks like the vibe is that he's just been like, things have only gone okay for old Dengar.
Dengar is grocery shopping with sweatpants on. And he don't care by the time we see him in Empire.
There we go. There we go. Yeah, I couldn't really remember. I knew Dengar was in this, but I kind of didn't remember exactly what the take was, and I really liked it.
Yeah, I do, too.
So we talked a little bit about Boba Fett. Did you like that he had the kind of proto armor? Did you like that this was a step on his path where he was kind of a leader, but he wasn't great at it yet?
Yeah, it actually makes it a real solid choice to have him there, like an actual good use of the character, good use of the story. It is not a nostalgia dump right there. If he had just been, not quite fitting into his father's gear, would have cheapened the moment for me. Wouldn't have been a complete failure or anything, but just I'm glad we got this point, this Boba at this point. It's an interesting look and to see that he was still on his journey. Again, not quite where he wants to be yet.
Yeah, I really, really love just in general watching the whole shape of the Clone Wars. That is, it's expanding. They're going like, okay, here's the characters that we're finding interesting. We want to spend time with them, and we want to let people see them as multifaceted characters. And we're tracking Boba Fett. We're tracking Asajj. This is a later season 4 episode where, like, there's no Ahsoka, no Anakin, no Obi-Wan, no Yoda. It's we care about these characters enough to give them their entire own episode.
Yeah.
And really kind of mark a part of a chapter in their story. And it makes me excited for Book of Boba Fett, of course, but it still also makes me really want to see young Boba Fett's arc completed in Bad Batch season 2.
Yeah, that'd be great. I want to see him get that dent.
Get that dent. Take the crown from Cad Bane. Yeah. I'm all for that. I know some fans are mixed, but I'm all in on that. Final thing for me for canon and lore is just, again, I think most of our listeners know this, but if anybody doesn't, that a lot of Asajj's journey that started here, we do see her again in the Clone Wars, but a lot of her journey that started here concludes in the novel Dark Disciple. There's a bunch of Clone Wars episodes that were initially written by Katie Lucas that were then novelized, and it's been several years since I read that novel, but man, did I like it. It's really unique and really special.
Yeah, Christy Golden does a great job with it, and it's one of those that's kind of on my mental list of when I have a moment from reading other Star Wars books, I'd love to revisit that one. Remember it, love it, took it in, but so much new Star Wars content has come out that I want to go live through that one again.
Exactly. Any other canon or lore connections that you noted?
You covered such a wonderful wide array, a lot in these episodes, a lot going on, a lot of characters showing up, and just when you're laughing and pointing fingers at Dengar, some serious stuff is going on, so the story moves.
Exactly. Anything you disliked or questioned?
Honestly, no, I really don't. I think these are two wonderful episodes, so well put together, such a great perspective from the writing side, and they're really effective, and Ventress is this character that, her popularity rises first with the Tartakovsky ones and then comes back here and they bring her along. They're like, all right, yeah, that's cool. Let's develop this character and it becomes something more. And, lots going on in the war at this time. Lots going on in Anakin and Obi-Wan's life. Obi-Wan's still probably recovering from his face being turned into Rocco Hardeen. And you take the time that this character deserves to talk about her and to tell this part of her story. And I think I love that as a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. There's nothing I really disliked or questioned. I think these are great episodes, really putting a highlight on great characters. This is Asajj's story, but we get a little Boba Fett, a little dash of Dengar. It's a great Star Wars dish. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, absolutely not. Other than, I'll hang out with the Night Sisters. I'll go party at the campfire.
Absolutely. I will go, dance to my own tune with the Night Sisters. That'd be great. I always like to shout out the great voice work of Barbara Goodson, his mother Talzin. It's so weird and great. Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up here, we always like to wrap up with this fun question. If we could have a toy or a figure of any kind based on this arc, who or what would you want?
What I would want is a Night Sister Lego playset complete with old Daka in a little cave.
Oh, that's a really good one. Oh, yeah, because old Daka, I mean, we didn't even talk about her. That design is so great. There's a lot going on there.
A lot going on, yeah.
Yeah, and that would be an old Daka minifig. Yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Give me a Daka, a Talzin, a Ventress, and like three Night Sisters, and then maybe a battle droid and Grievous.
Just one battle droid to torture again and again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love it. Love it. I would love a young Boba proto suit. action figure, nice classic 3 3/4. That'd be great. I like that Asajj's outfit changes as she goes through this identity crisis, right? Yeah. So I would love a 3 3/4 2-pack called Asajj's Identity Crisis. And you could have the Night Sister outfit and then the really cool, I don't know, I guess I'm going to be a kind of bounty hunter person. That outfit with the purple and the black.
Yeah. And the snake imagery on it. Great use of, you know, misunderstood creature, I think is the intention there. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then the final thing, Ken, this is a kind of an expensive product, but I think a lot of people would buy it. I want a lamp inspired by these episodes where the base is Dooku's body writhing in pain. And then the light up element is Mother Talzin exploding from his gut.
Talzin's upset stomach of taunts.
And now I got to see if there's a gif of Dooku going, cleared out the magic, better out than in. a lot of great toys. Next up is season 4, episode 21, Brothers. Season 4, episode 22, Revenge. These are the final episodes of season 4. It should line up well for us that we'll talk about those and then take a break for Boba Fett, the Book of Boba Fett. Excited to get into that Return of Maul arc. Ken, what should the moral of this episode of our podcast be?
Well, you know, I've both when we were still, you know, on Anchor and then now on, switching to Acast, I've had to take a dive in some of our older podcasts, some of the first episodes where the quality of sound, just even some of my own thoughts just fall short of my standards. And so it's a reminder that if the past, your podcast past comes to light in your future, let go of the past and take the right steps forward. And hopefully that includes a Night Sister dance party.
Go happily into your future dancing with the Night Sisters, if they will let you. That sounds absolutely great. Do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Would absolutely love to. We are the Force Center Podcast. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Our episodes are rebroadcast there in the audio form on YouTube. Some of you like your podcast there. Check that out. Like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. Get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Podcasts available in a lot of different places. With our switch to Acast, some new places will start popping up, so look for those. We'll keep you updated on that. We have a show going on right now on the companion app called Databank Dive. Look for that on our tweets. We got information on how to hear that show on the companion app. It's exclusive to them. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter, or you know, just tell your friends about us. We appreciate that as well. You can follow me at Ken Nabsock. Go to my website, kennabsock.com. For Joseph, you can go here where he's going to tell you.
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And for all of my other comedy adventures, you can check out my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Dooku's lock of hair, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.